and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is The Lantern Cast.
Episode 660.
That's right. We are talking about Green Lantern Corps issue number 19 tonight, which is the end of this Manhunter arc, right?
Yes, thank God. I say that with love compared to some of the other arcs that we've been praying to the comic book gods to end. This wasn't really one of them, but the Manhunters were not overly interesting in this arc, so that's the main reason why. Whatever we get next, because we may be longing for this, depending how things go. It's kind of like a roller coaster with these books. So let's try to wrap this up. We pick up where we left off on the Citadel on Oa, where the possessed body of Aya was about to go after Jessica Cruz, basically saying, "Hey, give us the entities, or else you're dead." We get some narration from Guy, because Guy is dealing with the entities, and he's kind of become the bridge, as we already kind of suspected, the bridge between the entities and the rest of the universe at this point. So what happens is Guy, before Manhunter Aya can really do anything permanently bad to Jessica, Guy comes out of his almost self-imposed comatose state, catatonic state, and just wax Aya away. And we see that he's kind of covered in chrome. It's almost like his robes are in chrome, almost like a chrome lantern. And he is essentially controlling all the emotional entities, but also a little twist, because he's able to pick and choose which parts of which emotion he can use at any given time. The entities in this splash page mostly look good. Ion looks like a friggin' shark. That's a problem. And Parallax is just drawn like Parallax, which of course hasn't been good in years. But other than that, it's not horrible. It's kind of, we know where we are with the entities. It's a nice splash page, at least from the color perspective. So the actual title of the issue is "I'll Be Good," Morgan Hampton, Fernando Pissarin, Juan Jose Rip, inkers are Claire Albert, Juan Jose Rip, colorist Prianto Herms, letterers Dave Sharp, cover artist Pissarin, Albert, and Prianto. I'm not going to do the variant cover artists, Kathleen Wisniewski, and Paul Kaminsky, and Jillian Grant. They round up all the editing group on this issue.
You should definitely do the first variant cover artist, because it's awesome. Have you seen it?
I doubt it.
It's Rotlop Fan shredding on guitar with somebody. I forgot. I'm going to have to pull it up, but it's...
Yeah. That's the Fournier's cover?
I'm pretty sure. I'll look it up.
So we get back into this. That guy's demonstrating the power I just described. Manhunter Aya is getting cocky, and Guy's just basically kicking her ass. And then luckily we find out, as he muzzles her, he's talking to Aya, and he goes, "Hey, if we buy you some time, can you get your body back?" And luckily Aya has kept her subscription to McAfee antivirus up to snuff, because she's, I've been working on it. All I have to do is run the program. So she kind of enters into the Manhunter body of herself, dealing with, hey, a Manhunter that actually looks like a Manhunter. This is almost very Tron-like to me, the way these two have this confrontation, and how the Manhunter throughout the issue kind of chides her, saying, "You have all this power and you choose to waste it here, and you're weak because you have programmed emotion," and which kind of is dumb, really. This is my point in this whole arc, that how could the Manhunters really harness the power of emotion and the emotional spectrum if they don't feel emotion? It just seemed like there was always a flaw. And as this issue plays out, Aya kind of makes it clear that is the problem, that the Manhunters can never really evolve the way they think they can, because they're incapable of feeling emotion. While she's been programmed to feel emotion, and as time goes by, she actually has earned, she actually has real empathy. And so she's kind of developed emotions on her own, even if they were originally just kind of not, non-organic. Outside, on above Oa, we have the Zord thing, like from Power Rangers that everybody made all the from the last issue to try to take on the giant-sized Manhunter robot. They do fairly well against the first one. They slice it in half, and all of a sudden, hey, we're looking good. All we have to do is get one more blow. And, of course, like a Hydra, the Aya robot, the Manhunter robot outside, duplicates itself. So the fight doesn't seem to be going well until Guy and Jessica show up. Guy kind of obliterates one of the robots, and he shares his all-sight, well, not the all-sight power, the emotional well power, as we find out, with Jessica. She kind of becomes Chrome. Then they go after the last of the Zord things there. Aya successfully wipes out the corruption in her system. Who is the other? Is that supposed to be Ellie, the other chick construct that she made? Because I didn't quite get that. We know it's Razor. She created like a construct version of Razor to accompany her.
No,
in her
that's
fight.
That's the Tamaranian.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's the one we met when Sinestro went with John to that planet.
But what's Aya's tie to her?
They were part of the same training group, I think.
Oh, okay, but they just say refer to her as a loved one, and that's the reason why it made no damn sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but during the chiding, the Manhunter kind of said, oh, something about her loved ones is not going to matter, or making like a construct of her loved ones, so that just threw me off. I agree, it didn't look like her, but I didn't know who the hell it was. So in the atmosphere, they break apart the last Manhunter robot, and they have all the scraps of the metal. They got to figure out what to do with them. We kind of get the typical ending these days. We get in these, it's like they acknowledge that, hey, you know, the real threat in the entire universe hasn't been resolved, but it's good enough for today. We'll deal with the threat down the road. We've already proven emotion can take out this metal and blah, 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 blah. So Guy's kind of sleeping all this off. Jessica goes to get him and say, hey, we need you. You're the all sight because they've just had this now. They have this emotional well kind of like in the center of where all the crappily drawn and created constructed power batteries are. And I guess this is supposed to be where all the pooling of all of the emotional spectrum energy into one, which kind of seems weird since you have the individual power batteries too, but I guess it's kind of like a little bit of that power all goes together. Who the hell knows? And Guy comes up with a really horrible oath, which I don't really want to read. If you want to read when we're done, feel free. It's an emotional spectrum oath. And everybody turns briefly Chrome, even though they're not always going to be Chrome all the time. So maybe they just have to, maybe you can only tap into that well, you know, under extreme circumstances. Joe's going off to do something, I think, apparently on Earth. Good for her. Hopefully we won't see her for a while. And we get this, we see the pairing of all the entities because I guess they're going to be, now that the Alpha Guardians, which I'm okay with that name, that we see the pairing of the entities now with quote-unquote, a permanent host. So Aya gets Ion, which kind of seems still weird because she's not alive, but I guess she's already established that she can feel. Say Walker gets Adara. That's friggin' way overdue. Razor gets the Butcher. Now, poor man. Atrocitus can't catch a break no matter what he does. Fatality gets Prozolite. We already knew that was coming. Sora, for some reason, gets, probably because she overcame it earlier, she gets Parallax again. And Lore Flees, probably unfortunately for Ophidian, but Lore Flees gets Ophidian back. And then next month, the Lanterns go against space capitalism. Whoa, that'll make Mom Donnie happy. And that's it.
Yeah. Aya getting Ion makes sense in terms of, because like they never said it, but in the TV show, when they were talking about how they created the AI, it made it seem like they ripped out a piece of Ion to make Aya.
Yeah, that is true. I do kind of remember that, at least that theory or that belief that that's what went down with Aya.
Yeah, I was like, they didn't say the words, but the way they described it made it sound like I'm pretty sure they just referred to ripping out a piece of Ion. But okay, I sent you on Facebook, by the way, the variant. It's Guy shredding on guitar with a Rotlop fan playing an instrument from his world. It's really cool looking.
Yeah, it's certainly unique, I'll tell you that.
I had to message Dan the moment I saw it. So I was like, dude, you have to know this exists so that you can get yourself one. Yeah, Ophidian going to Larflees, given everything that Ophidian was saying about how Larflees comes at, you know, being an Orange Lantern, that does and doesn't make sense. Like, why would he want to be with him? But also him being with him allows him to influence and talk to Larfleeze about how he decides to do things. So maybe he can convince Larfleeze to act in more of his interest.
He probably doesn't have enough. And the reality is there's probably not another choice at the moment. And that's the reason why they gave it to him, because we don't really have. Do we even have another Orange Lantern? No. So Larfleeze is the only show in town.
The rest of them, for the most part, seem to make sense to me. A Razor, yes and no. His journey, being like Blue Lantern and everything, the fact that he got his red back, and I don't know if he's, you know, becoming the vessel of the Butcher all the way back into becoming a red light. Like, just, this is the downside of not focusing on Aya and Razor since we got them back. Like, we don't know what's going on with him. Where is he at in his journey emotionally in terms of, you know, all the stuff that happened with him with the blue ring and all? Like, does this even make sense? We honestly don't know, because we haven't been focusing on him.
Now they're going to have a little entity baby.
Yeah. Sora doesn't make sense to me a whole lot. Like, I get that it's cool, but I don't know that Sora would want this.
Well, here's the thing. This is what I was kind of alluding to earlier, what I said about things that whether it makes sense, things that need to be clarified. Somewhere between Guy's conversation with the entities and what's going on here, which there wasn't, and it can still happen down the road, but knowing the way things go, it probably won't. There should have been some kind of agreement where it's like, okay, part of what we're going to do here is I'm looking after you. We're going to get hosts for all you guys. However, and then turn your eyes to the other side of the room. Parallax, Ophidian, the Butcher, Enter the Fair, the Predator should be in that group too. We're going to give you a host, but your job is, but essentially, you're not going to be controlling that host. You can't influence the host to do and completely control the host. You can have some influence on them. But you cannot take them over and force them to do things that they don't want to do, or else that's going to be a breaking point in what's going on here, because that's a problem conceptually with what they're doing with some of these entities. Now, pairing Sora up with Parallax eliminates part of that problem, because she seemingly overcame Parallax's influence and was able to deal with him one-on-one as much as anybody can. Which is still a problem, because we've never seen anybody, including Sinestro, because Sinestro was using like magic and other shit to keep Parallax at bay. We've never seen anybody in theory be able to control Parallax on their own for a long term without Parallax eventually taking control. But I think that's the missing piece, that these entities had to agree. Now it's going to be more of a symbiotic relationship. I mean, stuff you wouldn't have to explain, obviously, to Ion, probably to Adara, probably not even to Prozolite. But we know Predator is all the way on the extreme, and we've seen Predator do stuff before that he shouldn't have done, influencing-wise and controlling. But I think that's a missing piece if this is going to work long-term. You can't. Now, again, Larfleeze and Ophidian, you can make a case. Larfleeze is already who he is, so he can't really be more greedy than he is. And you're correct. Maybe the opposite will come into play, that maybe the influence of Ophidian will make Larfleeze maybe like have a different perspective or a proper perspective on the emotion. But the Parallax one, the Butcher, and the Predator were ones that kind of needed, even though we actually don't see Predator here, do we? No, we don't see so that's kind of a problem too.
It would have to be Carol until we get another Star Sapphire,
but still, it's kind of, I just realized that now, that's kind of a flaw. Because everybody's got, they're kind of back in the same boat, because not everybody has a host, which, of course, that's not exactly the part of the spectrum you want to be screwing around with, because the Predator maybe is not as willing to play games, to go take one for the team long term. If I was like, where the hell's my host?
Yeah, what you're describing is, and I think I had mentioned it before, it's the Firestorm Matrix. The host is Ronnie, and the entity would be Professor Stein. Professor Stein was obviously in the comics depicted as like this holographic floating head so that you could see who Ronnie was talking to. Nobody ever saw the floating head, but like, you know, you knew that he was having a conversation with the other side of himself. The two merged into one to become Firestorm. I imagine it working a lot like that here, you know, the host being the Ronnie, having the body and the control of the whole situation. And I think there have been times, if I remember my Firestorm lore correctly, where Professor Stein was able to exert control When Ronnie wasn't listening or doing something too dangerous, he was able to sort of influence things. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got that. Obviously, we have to, it's a remains to be seen type of situation where you need to see this happening, but I would not be surprised if it's Firestorm Matrix coded.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how this goes. But it is an interesting status quo that we're left with, and we'll have to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, it looks like Joe is going back to Earth for some leave. It looks like Sora has decided to stay on Oa and resume her duties as a doctor, looks like. This Katma thing bugs me, though.
Going back to Earth?
Yeah, why is she suddenly all lovey-dovey with John? We didn't resolve that. They had that conversation, and he took her down to Korgar, and the whole thing with Sora and Parallax happened, but that only served to like put a pause on what Katma was going through. We never finished that. What happened? You've seen where I come from. You knew he's been to Korgar a thousand times.
No,
what did
I agree.
Burn there. This is the don't get me wrong. This is still a better book than what Jeremy Adams currently has going on in the main title, but that doesn't mean this book is without its downsides. One of the downsides being the massive cast forces you to not take the time to properly develop some of these interpersonal relationships you keep hop, skipping, and jumping around to. We see Aya and Razor going on, but we haven't really spent any time with them. So like the whole thing with the Butcher, like I said, we don't know where he's at mentally, more importantly, emotionally, to know if that makes any sense for where he's at right now in his journey. Katma, the last time we saw this couple, they were kind of butting heads and she needed some space, but now she's ready to take a trip with him to Earth? I don't know.
Maybe she wants to get back to Earth and then dump him. There you go. Now take me home.
Or the Predator has said, screw this. I'm going to go find Carol. Rushes Carol. Inhabits her, chases her over, and Carol Ferris Star Sapphire kills Katma Tui again.
And John's like, oh, well, all's well that ends well.
It's still, look, I know I'm the Action Comics Weekly guy for the most part, but like, it still baffles me that they've never collected the Green Lantern stories. Literally the first arc, Star Sapphire kills Katma Tui. How has that never been reprinted? That's a big moment in Green Lantern history. I'm sorry.
No, I get it. I hear you.
What is this Chrome Lantern thing and how does it work? We're not going to be able to answer it here, I don't think.
Nope.
But it's the same kind of question about what is the emotional expanse and how does it work? You can't keep, like, okay, you've ended your arc. I got it. And maybe things will slow down a little bit. But now that you've introduced these concepts, can you take the breathing moment to give us a bit more explanation and context to what these things are and how they work before we jump headlong into the next thing? Because I need some more information. This feels almost like the way the Thorn run ended in a way, like where like...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Where freaking Simon got the ghostly lantern power and people were like changing colors and like whatever the hell was going on with all of that stuff. Obviously, it just ended. This series isn't just ending now. It's not the same situation, but it's setting things up. It's like, oh, here's this and here's how these things work. And now story over. And at least we have the benefit of having this creative team on the next couple of issues. So hopefully we get some more information about this. But it does feel like big thing, big thing, big change, big change. And we're not telling you exactly how it works yet. But hold on. And I think that's what a lot of people are pissed about. I've seen a lot of negative rumblings about this particular issue on socials this past week or so since the issue came out. A lot of people like, what is this Chrome thing? How or why or even is it at all different from a White Lantern power? Like, and if so, how? If it's accessing all the colors, then how? How is it different? You know? So like, I need more. I'm down for it. It makes sense that there's there's a difference between tapping into a specific emotional spectrum power being chosen by a ring. It makes sense that there's a difference between Kyle Rayner doing the whole like tour of the emotional spectrum and learning how to master each one individually, which thus then grants him the ability to connect with and become a White Lantern, whereas this is the entities giving people their collective power. So it's a different sort of thing. But is it? We're not going to get the answer in this conversation, but like the structure of it seems different, but the functionality doesn't. So what's the difference here?
I think the difference is being able to pick and choose which power you use and which aspect of the spectrum you can use at any given time. Not just even the color, but what part of that color.
So I think like the Phantom Ring?
No, not even because on one level, yes, because the Phantom Ring, you could tap into any part of the spectrum without having any real natural ties to it, which is kind of dumb. That was a really dangerous. I understand the concept of why that could be beneficial from a Guardian perspective, but on one level, but it was really dumb. That goes back to the old idea, like Green Lantern rings for sale, that classic Silver Age issue. Yeah. With everybody just getting the power ring and flying off with it. It's just the fact that you can hop, skip and jump between, cycle through any color that you want. But I think it's also which aspect, what part of each emotion that you tap into get to when you're using the power, that you're not just a slave to one. Like if you're using red, you can't, there's like we've talked about with all the emotions, different aspects of rage, different aspects of love, that I guess you're able to tap into different aspects of the overall emotion, as opposed to just being a slave to, well, you have to, it's like all or nothing. But, and the fact that, yeah, it's probably closest to the Phantom Ring, not a White Lantern, because Kyle, when he's the White Lantern, is just using all the power combined into one. He's harnessing and combining it all at one time. We absolutely need more definition. I mean, that's another thing. And to me, the emotional well is even more confusing. When do you tap into it? Where does that power direct? I mean, is that power directly from the entities? And that's a separate power source, that's the energy that the entities are giving back to them for them getting their, you know, when they get recharged, and as they get more powerful, a certain percentage of all their energy goes into that well. And then under the right circumstances or when needed, everybody can tap into it and basically become that Chrome Lantern, for a better way of describing it. I don't know. But again, we damn well need more of an explanation.
Yeah, because like, and what are the drawbacks of the Chrome Lantern power? Because if this exists and everybody can access it, then why would anybody go back to the individual power they were originally had?
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, if it's more powerful, if it grants more focus or whatever, if it gets the job done better, why would you go back to your singular emotion? There's got to be like a time limit on it, or you have to get the permission from the entities, or the All Sight has to be the one to give you the power and share it. Because the All Sight is there when they charge up and become Chrome Lanterns. I keep, calling him the All Sight. Just say Guy. He's there, but he's the one who pointed his ring and shared it with Jessica. Which that was weird when she pointed at him like finger guns and is like, took you long enough to offer. It's like he says, hold out your ring, and they touch fists, and that's how like she gets it. And then she's the only one who gets it until they charge up at the well, but the All Sight is there, so maybe he's there and able to share his power with them, so it has to be done through him.
Maybe that could be true, because he essentially is the guardian of the, you know, of the entities. Mm-hmm. So maybe that is true.
Yeah. And yeah, how does the well work? Is it like an overflow of excess energy in the center from all the power batteries? Is it like a portal that somehow taps into the emotional expanse, and that's gathers the collective energy from there? Did the entities go, we're going to mentally focus on this one spot, and any extra energy we have, we're going to put in there? Again, there's so many questions about how this works, why it works, and everything that really needs to be answered before we jump into the next thing, even though they're already teasing the next thing, both with space capitalism at the end, and then everybody's like, you know, Joe's going to Earth, John and Katma apparently going to Earth, so on and so forth. But they also, we know there's a fight coming with Darkseid. So like, they're already, we got like six things coming up. So like, can we take a breather just for a moment and give me some more information here before we just push at 1,000 miles an hour into the next thing?
And based on what we got here, I mean, unless we're going to get a, looking ahead a little bit, and it is kind of conjecture still, but unless we're going to get a convergence parallax, or we're going to get that splinter parallax show up, it's not looking too promising that we're going to have a parallax story for Green Lantern 50.
No.
Based on the current continuity and what they just established. Yeah.
That's all we got, though. Core 20, the core can't catch a break. In the aftermath of multiple conflicts, the Lanterns take advantage of some much-needed downtime. John and Katma go to Earth. Joe picks a fight with space bandits. And Jessica Cruz micromanages the remaining Lanterns on Oa as a mounting superpower gains a foothold in the galaxy.
No Darlings, please.
Yeah. Please. Core 21 solicit says Core leader Jess has her hands full trying to establish rules of order for the new Alpha Guardians. When Jill Mullian drops a new problem on her desk, something about interplanetary pirates and stuff, but there's no cover yet. So
that establish could rules that of could, order. Yeah, that could possibly give us some answers about what about what the entities should be doing and what they should not are not allowed to do.
Yeah, hopefully. So maybe it'll be like, you know, the breather issue is 20 and 21 will give us some more context, hopefully. So
hope so.
All right, what's next?
Well, let's do Green Lantern sales. We actually had these ready to go last week, but it just didn't seem well last week. Last week's episode for us 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like we really needed to throw them into the same issue, the episode as the first episode of the Lantern show. So surprisingly, both Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps rose considerably. I have to pull up last month's charts to see how we know they both were lousy sales last month. I just didn't do my combination number on this. But Green Lantern 37 moved all the way up to 115. That was 141, I think. That one I think I remember was 141. And Green Lantern Core 18 moved all the way up to 116. So they're side by side. So that's impressive. And something also fascinating which we kind of care about, only to like nod our heads going, okay, we could see that. Absolute Green Lantern dropped all the way down to 97. So it's pretty, and that was not a double month, and it wasn't a resolicit. So that's just a real regular, that monthly issue in July for Absolute dropped all the way down to 97. So it certainly would seem, based on the way it was trending anyway, that the bloom is kind of off the rose for that series.
That's the exact analogy I was going to say, too. Because I think, too, the aftermarket value, I think I heard, of Absolute Batman is starting to drop, too.
Yeah, I mean, some level, it would not be surprising if the overall, you know, brand starts weakening, especially as we build closer to Absolute Crisis, which is probably going to be a shit show. But still, no matter what, it is one of those things where it probably is not surprising that this thing is starting. It almost, I guess we can look at it from this perspective. It almost was like Thanos. It almost was like inevitable that at some point, the fact that it was really not an easy story to like, and it was difficult. Let's put it that way. It was difficult, and at some point, the chickens were going to come home to roost. And it appears that they're roosting at least a little bit now, because that is by far, for a book that for the longest time was consistently inside like the top 30, like clockwork. Green Lantern Corps was 155 last month, so that moved all the way. So that was even more impressive rise than obviously Green Lantern did. Why? We don't know. Maybe there's a little bit of buzz about the show, about the TV show might have helped. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, we know the issue with Green Lantern was better. But Core hasn't been bad, period. So it never made sense why Core dropped the way it did either. So it's kind of odd, but nonetheless. So that's the good news. The good news is they both moved up. knocking on the door, relatively speaking, of potentially getting back into the top 100. Now, can they seal the deal? Probably not. I mean, not for both. Let's see, the next issue of Green Lantern is going to be dealing with the friggin' condiment guys again. So that's probably going to be a torpedo in the hole. But we'll see. I mean, it unfortunately sucks only because I was so close to my prediction coming true, and I may not. Not that I was ever rooting for failure, but it seemed like a foregone conclusion this book was going to drop into the 150s. Came perilously close. Doesn't mean it won't eventually get there. It just means it doesn't look like Kyle. Luckily for Kyle, it doesn't look like he's going to be the albatross or the one with the albatross handed to him around his neck. That's going to be the spokesperson for the brand as it sinks that low. But either way, good news for sales for now. And we take the victories where we can get them.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Anything else?
No, we didn't talk about this last episode. Did you watch the Vision Quest trailer?
I think I'd seen it, but I think what I saw was like somebody had taken clips from it, which is weird. So I don't think I saw the full thing. I'd seen images though. Yes.
It's interesting. It's freaky, which we would suspect considering how it's part of the WandaVision and Agatha thing. It would be, I have high hopes for it. It's the timing is good since it starts on October 14th. So pretty much right around the time Green Lanterns ends, it'll be time for Vision Quest. So I'll be curious to see what the status quo is with Vision by the time we get to the end of that. But at least that's something from a TV show perspective I'm looking forward to from Marvel. Also thought it was interesting, which just popped into my head now, that I do find it interesting, which tells you it must have been a ridiculously self-serving cameo of nothing of any consequence at all, that Jessica Henwick actually did have the opportunity to be in Daredevil season 3 as Colleen, but she turned it down because she only wants to be Colleen under the right circumstances because of how good where she felt the character would left off at the end of Iron Fist. So I guess it was probably either going to be a glorified cameo or nothing of consequence. And so I have to really respect that considering how much she loves that character and how much she's held off on. Not that she was ever offered the role of Shang-Chi's sister. That's, again, a myth that gets perpetuated. She was offered a chance to read for it. She was never offered the role. But one of the reasons why she was less than gung-ho to even go down that road was because she knew it would cut her off in all likelihood forever being Colleen again. So she clearly wants to be Colleen again, but she wants it to be a worthwhile reason to be for Colleen to come back. So let's hope at some point there is. But I just thought that, thinking of Marvel's TV shows, that made me think of that. Speaking of Marvel, as we speak today on the 19th, brand new day is over 800 million now. It will topple No Way Home in the next few days. It will either topple by Tuesday, by this coming Tuesday, it will topple Endgame. And then it comes down to just what does it have left in the tank? Can it get to 900 and can it have any kind of chance to catch The Force Awakens? I still don't think it'll catch The Force Awakens, but I do think I still think it's going to get to 900, which leads to one last thing here for me. Oh, actually, before we go into that, the Henry Cavill rumors have been kicking up. They've been picking up a lot about him about to be cast in Marvel, probably related to the X-Men.
Wouldn't be a surprise.
I just hope it's meaningful. I mean, if it's Magneto, it would be interesting. If it's Cable, I don't like Cable at all. And I don't think, I mean, could he do the part? Sure, he could do the part. But it would be cool. It would be a nice middle finger to, obviously he can get his little passive-aggressive middle finger to the DCU there, or to James Gunn in particular. But that's been obviously picking up a lot of steam in the last couple of days. So maybe that might be imminent, assuming there's fire where there's that smoke. And one last thing, and I'm only because I mentioned I was going to say this, I'll try to keep it brief, about the sales for Doomsday and how they're pacing like 65-67% ahead of Spider-Man at the same point, which is a weird analogy anyway, considering Spider-Man tickets were only on sale for like a month and a half max, and Doomsday's tickets have been on technically Doomsday tickets have been on sale for over a month if you go back and look at the Infinity Vision rollout. But it's such a weird apples to apples, because I don't even know if that includes the number of showings that are available to buy tickets for, because it's possible Doomsday has more theaters already listed at this time for tickets than Spider-Man did during the initial ticket launch. So having more, if that's the case, selling more tickets wouldn't be as impressive, because it would mean that you had more tickets available to buy too. But either way, I'm not telling you it can't beat Brand New Day in December. I'm just saying there's reasons to pump the brakes on this, because number one, you have direct competition that Brand New Day and actually Endgame didn't have. Dune is going to make a lot of money that weekend. Even beyond the IMAX screens, Dune opened up to over 80 million, the last part. And Dune really hasn't done earlier in the year. There was a little bit of publicity for Dune, like when the trailer came out in the beginning of the year. But Dune's been relatively quiet, though now you're starting to see it starting to build up, because like the super early advanced IMAX showings, I think, went on sale. So you know it's gearing up. But the odds are that movie's going to make at least $100 million on opening weekend. I still have a hard time believing if that movie makes 100 or more, that Doomsday is going to be able to make that much when you're competing with this, for the same audience. Unless everybody who sees Dune also goes to see Doomsday in the same weekend. If they did, then yeah, then I guess. But you only have a finite amount of business available on any given week. I know it's a holiday, but I don't know. So I think the competition is a big problem. I think the auditorium splits is a problem, because even though I work under the assumption that Doomsday is going to get more of the theaters, that's going to get probably like a 65-35, 70-30 split of initial listings of showings. But still, Dune's going to have a lot of showings. You can make a case Dune is more likely to sell out their showings if there's less of them too, which means theaters will be scrambling to try to add showings of both Doomsday and potentially Dune 2, and you only have so many showings you can add. And even if it's a 70-30 split of all the additional shows that you add, that's still 30% of the shows that you could have if you had opened a week earlier that you're not going to get now. Plus the auditorium splits, even if most of the theaters are playing Doomsday over Dune, if you have four big houses in your multiplex, the odds are those are going to be split evenly. That one of each. Let's say you have two top tier theaters, the same seating, and then you have the next two down that are also the same. That the odds are Dune and Doomsday are going to split those. They're going to give one of each type because they know there's going to be a demand for it. So I just think there's a lot of things working against Doomsday as far as being a lock to do so. Because honestly, the 65%, if anybody really believed that Doomsday could make like 65% more on opening weekend than Spider-Man, that's like, first of all, I think that's mathematically impossible, because you're talking about, it's like $234 million more opening weekend. That ain't going to happen. That's like mathematically impossible for that to happen. Even now, people looking at that number and saying, well, what does that translate to box office? They're saying, oh, it could be like 375 to 400. Yes, if everything falls into place. Let's see if it does. There's lots of movies that have had early ticket sales that have been really impressive and it hasn't meant anything. There are some ticket sales that have been really good to start with. There's some ticket sales that start off really slow and there's a lot of walk-up business. At the end of the day, it's the same number of seats. It's just, when are they going to sell out? And Doomsday Plus is longer, which we know isn't the kiss of death, because Endgame was longer. Just like losing all the IMAX screens is not as much of a kiss of death in theory, because Brand New Day overcame that, but Brand New Day overcame a movie that had been out for 3 weeks, or entering into its third weekend, and was only competing for maybe 50 to 60% of the same audience, even if they both came out at the same time. While Doom and Dune are probably going to be competing, objectively, playing being conservative, no less than 70% of the same audience, and probably 80, 90% of the same audience is for both movies. So I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying it doesn't automatically mean it's going to happen. There's a lot of X factors that I think could. Plus, we don't know if people are going to like Doomsday. The word of mouth, I mean, Spider-Man has such a buzz about it to begin with. And we just have to see. But I just figured I'd say that now just because there's been a lot of talk about that this week. As far as what I've seen other than Brand New Day, before Brand New Day, or sandwiched in between, I saw Her Private Hell, which is a weird-ass pseudo-horror movie. It's hard to describe. It's something that's visually really interesting, but trying to figure out what the hell's going on in it and feeling, and it's pretty boring. It's pretty slow. I'd watch it again if it ends up on any streaming service I have. But if it was still playing, I wouldn't recommend anybody to go see it. So Ice Cream Man last week, which was the latest Eli Roth gross gore fest. For an Eli Roth movie, it was pretty good. I'd watch it for free. I'd recommend somebody watch it for free. I don't think you need to see it in the theater. And I think that's all I got, Chad.
Yeah, I think I need the whole Dune thing. I have HBO and Max now. I guess I should watch those movies, huh?
Oh, you haven't watched either one yet? Yeah, I would watch them both.
Yeah.
Here's your opportunity to catch up in case if it has no interest for you, but certainly if you make it through the first one and try. I mean, I thought the second one. I think the second one a little better. But and that's actually another point is Dune is the end of a trilogy that's been gaining momentum. Doomsday is really just the beginning of a two-part story. So you can make a case that the impetus to go see that movie first might be stronger for the Dune people or the people who are evenly split. It's like, I'd rather see how this ends than seeing how something begins when you know we're not going to get a resolution to this for over a year. But yeah, I'd watch. I think it's worth it. There's a lot of stuff. Now that you have it, now you can watch my adventures with Superman. You can do it. There's a bunch of stuff you could play around with now and watch.
Yeah, the DC stuff is priority. Creature Commandos is definitely.
Yeah, you'll probably like that. Creature Commandos was good. Peacemaker season one would be worth trying. I mean, if you watch season one, you might as well watch season two, but season one is just far superior. But it's better than you thought it would be, which is you'll have fun lifting it up, lifting the hood up and looking underneath and seeing what's there. I think you'll enjoy it while you have it during your Lantern's journey.
Did you see, this is a little off topic, but just because we have the extra time, did you see the new Happy Meal toys that McDonald's is getting, the Godzilla stuff?
No.
They're doing a Godzilla crossover with with Hello Kitty.
Oh, my God.
That's funny. They're like Hello Kitty characters wearing a costume of Godzilla characters, but there's a space Godzilla. So
he's everywhere. Speaking of which, I actually, that was kind of a good segue because I kind of mentioned, I was going to mention to you before, but I kind of forgot. Today, when I was out of Target, by luck of the draw, I stumbled into the Donatello Jet Jaguar combination.
Pop. Nice.
So I bought him because Donatello is my favorite turtle. And I do have fond memories of Jet Jaguar since literally I think that was the only Godzilla movie as a kid that I ever actually saw in a theater, which actually was a drive-in. I remember Godzilla versus Megalon quite fondly. So I thought that was a cool enough combination. And look, I said, well, I'll buy it.
Yeah, I bought the Leo Godzilla one. Donnie is my favorite turtle as well. As an adult, Leo, I think, was my favorite as a kid. Donnie is my favorite as an adult, but I don't have any connection to or care much for Jet Jaguar. But I got Leo Godzilla. It's still in the box because also I think the box is just cool.
Yeah, like, it is. It is cool.
Really nicely designed. I really hope they do another wave of those, but I kind of doubt it. I don't know. And like any other character that they could do other than maybe the villains would probably not sell very well. I'm not sure. Turtles are kind of everywhere right now. They're kind of a background popularity thing. They're crossing over with absolutely everything right now. So I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, this Space Godzilla keeps popping up everywhere, and is it not strange we haven't heard anything about the new Godzilla movie?
Yeah, I mean,
the legendary one, not
yeah. I know what you meant. Yeah, I do think it's odd. I mean, it's not the kiss of death or anything, but it is odd considering that movie's what is March again, I believe, that we haven't even got a teaser trailer for it. Maybe they're going to time the teaser trailer maybe for November when Godzilla Minus Zero or whatever comes out.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad timing, but it just seems a little late, doesn't it?
It does seem late, but I guess that was one of the surprise things from Comic-Con, I guess, was that when you look at it, that they didn't have anything for that. You think it would be
they had the Funko, but that was,
yeah.
That's another story.
I mean, going back to your point, you know, they could do. I mean, they did do Ghidorah in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles line. So doing another, there's other.
Oh, I mean the turtles to cross over with.
Oh, so like, you mean doing? Oh, I got you. Not using.
Yeah, yeah. So like getting Shredder to cross over with somebody, gotcha. Getting Bebop and Rocksteady. Like I'm just like. of the other characters they could pick, like they would pick April or Splinter, or like some of those, like, yeah, those are characters people care about and love, but you've already got the main four turtles over and done with in the first wave. Wouldn't anything else be just not able to sell as well, unless you did specifically focused on the villains, the turtle villains, and obviously you'd cross them over with a specific choice of kaiju.
Or they could just do a second wave and do a, hey, there's Slash. I was just thinking of Slash when you were saying that. Slash, obviously, was the one they could easily do since he looks like a turtle. Yeah. I mean, he is a turtle, but I mean, he looks like them. But they could just do a second wave and just have the turtles as different, as more Godzilla or Godzilla and Kong characters. They could do that. But yeah, I mean, they all look cool, to be honest with you. They all look cool. Even Ralph as Rodan and...
That's the one I've been tempted by, because I've seen that one. That one seems to be the one less people buy.
Yeah, like, Rodan, probably.
Maybe, but I've been tempted by it because one, I do have a soft spot in my heart for Rodan, although he's the kaiju bitch. One of them at least. and not just in the legendary films, but yeah. No, I just there's Godzilla stuff popping up everywhere. There's Godzilla crossovers in comics. They've been doing a Marvel one that either just wrapped up or is about to wrap up. There's new Godzilla comics series. I think there's like three or four different Godzilla series happening right now. There's like a new era called the Kaisera era. There's a lot of Godzilla stuff that is just cropping up everywhere. New toys, those toys I told you about, the ones I sent you a picture of, the like where you, they've got these little accessories that you can just kind of take. If you buy the whole wave, all the accessories can fit on each other, and you can like mech out some of these characters, and it's like a little 2-inch figure. My purple and gold Space Godzilla figure that I have. Yeah. Those are new and drop. There's all kinds of new shit happening with Godzilla merch wise, comic wise. It feels like they're gearing up, but also like we haven't heard a peep about the films. Honestly, we haven't heard a peep about Minus Zero. We know it's coming, and you know, I think we got a brief teaser for it. But beyond that, we really haven't heard anything about Minus Zero either.
No, we haven't. That probably was. So overall, I guess if we look back at Comic-Con, that was probably surprising that we didn't get any Godzilla stuff as for movie of two movies on the horizon, and we didn't get much of anything. That is disappointing, but we know that's going to be kicking up soon. I mean, hey, maybe they'll be smart and they'll throw it on Endgame.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that's part of the reason I brought up the McDonald's Happy Meal toy. Like McDonald's starts picking a theme for a Happy Meal toy, you know something's on the horizon.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's
I mean, it's a crossover with Hello Kitty, but at the same time, it's Godzilla, like of the two franchises. Actually, I don't know which is. I would hope Godzilla is the more popular one, but it's Japan. So who the hell knows if Hello Kitty might have a bigger fan base? Maybe there's something big on the Hello Kitty horizon.
No matter what, it's an interesting pairing. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, one of these days, the next time I send you your gift box. So you get your Kyle. I will try to not only send you my Godzilla keychain that I have for you, but I think I will finally send you that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Dr. Squatch soap. I will bag it even more than it's already bagged. So then you will
is
have
it like a sewer soap or something.
No,
like that?
Thank God, no. That's not how we joked about it. It smells like pizza.
Okay.
It smells like pizza. So you will have the choice of using it, keeping it segregated somewhere so it doesn't smell so bad. I mean,
I don't know if I want to smell like pizza. I can't.
I agree with you. But as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan, you should at least have the soap to smell, even if you don't want to use it. Yeah. And again, if you use it, I would recommend for the hell of it, you use it twice. If you really hate it after the second time, just throw it away. I won't be offended. But trust me, I bought a 3-pack of that when it came out. I've had the third bar, the only one that I used one. I gave one to my friend Dan. I kept one. That third bar has been segregated from all my other soaps just because I didn't want the smell waffling and crossing over. It's not like it smells horrible. It smells like pizza. But pizza's not what you want your soap to smell like. It's supposed to be invigorating. It's supposed to be light. It's supposed to be airy. Pizza's not airy. It's a great smell. But that, so it was a poor design. And when you joked about the sewer, it was a poor choice of a collaboration. Because once you committed yourself to doing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle collaboration, what else were your two choices? It either, if it wasn't going to be pizza, it was either going to smell like a sewer or salmonella. Neither one's a good choice.
I made it through the Godzilla and the Thor bars you sent me. I switched back to body wash for a little bit. There's a Dove has a bourbon and vanilla that smells really, really good. I've just been liking the smell of the bourbon smell is apparently pretty popular in like the men's scents.
Yes,
right
a
now.
Lot, a lot. Bourbon, rum. There's a lot of
sandalwood.
Yes. Yeah. Amber. There's a lot of earthy tones.
Vanilla is definitely like I've just been like I've been like enjoying putting that in the loofah, like just smelling that. So I've just been working my way through that. I still have the Venom one. I don't know.
Oh, you haven't even used Venom yet.
Got my way through Godzilla Kong and got my way through Thor. But Thor is the Godzilla Kong soap and the Thor soap. I like the Thor soap better, I think, smell wise.
Yeah, you might like the Venom might win out over the three when you try it. Depending again what I have when the time comes when I box this up. Another good soap another collaboration they just came out with, which was fantastic, was really good, was the Dungeons and Dragons one. The Dungeons and Dragons soap is really, really nice. They've been on a win streak for a while. I would have to admit that probably the worst collaboration that I've certainly of anything that I've tried so far was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think it was ill advised because of what your options were. I think it's probably the reason why they've never put it out again. And even when they're doing some of those sometimes they do a mystery limited edition brick bundle. You can buy like three bricks or six bricks, and you don't know what you're gonna get, but you just know they're limited edition. I don't think they've ever included that in that too. So I think they know that one was a dog. But again, it's not like it smells horrible. It's just not what you would expect a bar of soap to smell like. But as a collector, you might want it as long as you just. And trust me, if when I'm getting ready to package it up, if it smells even if after it's double bagged, I might just put it in a plastic container in with the double bags and just send it to it. So that way it'll be that way it won't. I mean, I don't think it's that bad to be fair once it's bagged. Plus, it's a couple of years old now, so the scent it's going to be weakened now anyway. But nonetheless, yeah. But we were talking turtles, and I was thinking about that the other day because I see it all the time. It's just not on the same shelf as the other soaps downstairs. It's like, ah, there it is. Sometimes it's like, and then I sniff the plastic bag once in a while, and I was like, yeah, that's the reason why I haven't used you. But
all right, guys, thanks for listening. If people want to drop us a line or have, you know, their new fan, we talked about it last episode. If they're new fans, they have questions about GL, how do they reach out to us?
LanternCast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use hashtag Geocast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.